This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Julian Ng and Sharit Abdullah. Now, Facebook has announced plans to launch a cryptocurrency in a move that could diversify its business away from advertising while further entrenching themselves in the daily lives of their users. Now, the cryptocurrency will be called Libra and it will be a secure blockchain-based payment system backed by hard assets and designed for the ordinary user. Now, earlier today, we ran a poll on the BFM Twitter at BFM Radio and we asked if you would use it. So there are about 20 minutes left on the poll. So if you haven't voted, you still can head over to the BFM Twitter and vote. But so far, the yes votes have currently only pulled in about 13%, whereas 7% said no but would use others, 37% said no digital currencies, and 43% said wait and see.
I think Facebook is not issuing a cryptocurrency in the traditional sense of Bitcoins or Ethereum. What they're doing is issuing a stable coin which is backed by a basket of currencies, including the US dollars. And this would reflect the global revenue structure. They want to open this so that people can trade basically using this coin within their ecosystem. And as good as an e-wallet, actually.
Yeah, so those ecosystems are huge. And I think that's what's going to be the motivation, isn't it? I mean, that being able to go global, borderless, and that would be the attraction that would probably attract users like me, for example.
Yeah, I think essentially what Facebook is trying to create here is the stable coin that what you mentioned, Julian. Essentially, it's to try and minimize the steep volatility seen in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, particularly because if we remember, Bitcoin hit a high of what, 20,000 US dollars a coin, and then went as low as 4,000. So no one wants to, that's not something that is a viable trade anymore when it exhibits that much volatility. So things like stablecoin, there are other stablecoins on the market. Tether is one of the market leaders, and they have exhibited a fairly decently consistent valuation, so 1-to-1 to the US dollar over the last 4 years or so.
I think if you are based in a US dollar currency environment, then that's fine. But if you're in ringgit, that's also somewhat volatile against your ringgit. With a stable coin in Facebook, at least it goes some way in reflecting the revenue structure, the global earnings of Facebook, some US dollar, some euro, some Japanese yen here and there. But the poll question itself is interesting because without knowing it, people have already bought into digital currencies. Because when you use a service and you put a layer of digitalization on top of that, which is what Facebook is trying to do with blockchain and smart contracts and so on, because that coin within Facebook can actually do other things and they want to make it open source so that everybody can work on it to make that coin more useful, right? So the poll question is very interesting because I feel that people are already in some form of a digital system without knowing it. So that 37% who say no digital currencies, and I have no intention of influencing the votes here, but you are already using some kind of digitalization in terms of your payments. Grab, for example, has 150 million downloads, right? One in three ASEAN citizen already is in some kind of digital ecosystem, right? Facebook has 2.5 billion users across the world. So are they or are they not using a digital currency? This is such a philosophical question that goes back to the origins of Bitcoins.
Yeah, I'm still seeing that at the moment. I mean, perhaps my familiarity is that there is a line still between those mobile payments as well as the when we speak about blockchain technology. I mean, blockchain is another layer of security, another layer of encryption, another layer of network where, you know, once a currency is sort of registered, it's immediately duplicated around the world. So it adds that, you know, that cross-border transaction easiness, and, you know, as well as cost, as well as safety as well.
Yeah, but speaking of safety, I mean, Facebook does have a little bit of a trust problem because if we remember the Cambridge Analytica scandal, you know, showing that I think people, the UK-based Cambridge Analytica improperly accessed 87 million Facebook users' data. So with that in mind and the fact fact that Facebook hasn't really come out to say with any kind of proper clarity what they've been doing to prevent such breaches from happening again. I don't know whether people will be actually willing to trust Facebook with their money in that situation, because if they will be coming out with a cryptocurrency like Libra.
Yeah, I think that this is something that they would have to be very careful about, not to step on any regulatory landmines. But having said that, privacy is, of course, very important, but the features and the applications and the utility of what can come out of this, I think, is so much more huge than what we realize. And even the people who oppose getting onto the ecosystem are traditional banks, which are afraid of regulatory factors. You know, they have not bought into this coin, and therefore Facebook might have to look for other partners and have to go it alone.
Yeah, and this is not new. I mean, for example, in China, Tencent and WeChat Pay, they've with their mobile payment, they're collecting a lot of user information, and that has facilitated convenience. For example, to facilitate more businesses and loans for small, medium enterprises. So again, Facebook, this is, you know, when you talk about privacy, what, you know, blockchain itself is already an encrypted layer. So it's interesting where how this develops.
Now, speaking of Chinese companies, another large Chinese company is Huawei, and they're hurting from the US clampdown on their products. This week, Huawei founder Ren Zhengfei confirmed that the company has suffered about a 40% drop in smartphone shipments abroad since it was placed on the US export blacklist on the 17th of May. Now, Ren also said he expects Washington's sanctions to curtail Huawei's overall revenue by about $30 billion over the coming 2 years. Now, Bloomberg reports that Huawei sales and marketing managers are internally estimating a drop in volumes of anywhere between 40 and 60 million smartphones this year. So for more perspective, earlier we spoke with Brock Silvers, managing director of Kaiyuan Capital based in Shanghai, and we asked him, can Huawei realistically survive without access to the US market?
Well, it really depends upon how we define survive. Huawei will certainly exist, but the question is, in what form and at what scale? Its 5G business is already significantly impacted, and we just don't know yet how far that U.S. ban will eventually extend. Even the lower tech phone business significantly eroded, and they've announced $30 billion U.S. in production cuts over the next 2 years alone. Newer phones not only may lack chips, but also Western operating systems, American social media. Huawei can claim it won't matter and put on a brave face, but consumers are, I think, unlikely to follow along.
So what do you think are Huawei's options to mitigate the effects of the ban?
Well, Huawei doesn't really have comprehensive options, but there are some smaller steps it can take. Some supply chains on certain componentry can be shifted, but many can't. The company probably has stockpiled some other supplies, which could help in the short run. And China can still grow into a supplier of some items, but not enough. So the answer is Huawei does have a few options, but none of them are really good.
And we ask whether or not China-based players who are emerging could supply the necessary know-how and component parts needed by Huawei to keep production going.
Yes, perhaps, but only really on the periphery. The U.S. tech environment is loaded upstream and downstream from components to app developers. And that's taken sort of decades of work combined with copious amounts of both freedom and financial capital. And China can't just replicate that overnight. As a quick example, China would like to produce its own high-end chips, but even the standard IP used to design chips is itself proprietary to the U.S. And that's why China's been diligently trying to purchase chip IP, but without much success. And look, a Chinese operating system phone is just unlikely to outcompete established operating systems, except perhaps in a very long run.
Now, CNBC reported earlier this week that U.S. chipmakers are quietly lobbying the U.S. government to ease the Huawei ban. So we asked Brock, how is this ban impacting American companies?
Well, there is certainly some lobbying going on now. And without question, companies generally like to earn profits. You know, U.S. chip makers have been generating tremendous revenue in China, and they're really quite loath to just give that up. But look, getting tough on China may be the one single issue that can unite both parties in Washington, D.C. And I think Trump is fairly unlikely to simply back down on Huawei. It's not the way he thinks, but there would also be a very steep political price to pay. So I would expect that the Huawei ban continues, at least in some form, at least for a while.
And we also asked him whether he sees China making a deal with the U.S. to save Huawei.
I think China would love to make a deal with the U.S. to save Huawei, but an all-encompassing deal might still be quite unlikely. The removal of the supplier ban, I think, is probably achievable, and that would allow Huawei to continue to sell products globally. But the ban on Huawei's participation in 5G infrastructure is probably here to stay. That's based on what the U.S. views as legitimate security concerns, and those won't just abate because we've struck a trade deal.
And that was Brock Silver's managing director of Kai Yuan Capital. And I think this whole problem of how China is going to manage their new operating system, if and when they do eventually come out with one, is going to be a very interesting one because, I mean, for one thing, they're going to have to convince app developers to bring their apps onto their mobile store. And that's going to be an entire set of discussions that that Western players have been conducting over the past couple of decades. So it's really China does have a lot of catching up to do if they want to go toe-to-toe with the giants.
I want to say no way, but other people would say never say never to me. but you're right, it's such an uphill task, right? Because there's a whole ecosystem involved, and today it's just iOS or Android.
Yeah, so before, I mean, speaking about Huawei, one of the things that turned them around was definitely their camera, their partnership with Leica and their camera. Mm-hmm. And so that was very attractive. But that's something that you would want, but something that you need is something that's interoperable, something that could speak between, and also access to application. BlackBerry was one of those victims before. They were not they were standalone. At the end of the day, no apps, no owners, I guess.
That's right. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.